listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, February 2nd already. My name is Michael Kelly. I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Hey Michael, I'm glad to be here. It's going to be a good show. I know it.
It is. Getting excited already. Thanks to those that are joining us live. We appreciate having you here. I appreciate the back and forth. And a special thank you to those that take the time to catch up with us in the archives. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore science and spirituality. And in addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. Now, before we get into tonight's topic, we're going to begin, as always, with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. And those are, 1, do no harm, do right. 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4, we are all equal, one planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6, we are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7, self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will creates self-completeness. 8, metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9, expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. All right, and on to tonight's topic. It's going to be a very interesting one. We're going to be discussing near-death experiences with our special guest, Teresa Wilson, and she is an IMHS doctoral candidate pursuing 2 different doctoral degrees, and she has been on the honor roll the entire time. So welcome, Teresa.
Well, Dr. Michael and Dr. Vicki, thank you so much. I'm truly delighted to be here. And I'm here because of an IMHS class, Advanced Metaphysical Concepts, in which the topic of death and dying is discussed. It's a topic I've been interested in for a long time, going way back to 1972 when I read a New York Times bestseller book by Dr. Raymond Moody called Life After Life. And if you'll indulge me, I'm going to take you back to 1972 for a few minutes.
Oh, absolutely.
Go back 50 years. It was not common at that time for family to be with people as they died in a hospital or a nursing home. But doctors and nurses had shared anecdotes about unusual experiences as people died, particularly if they were resuscitated. People came back with amazing stories, and the clinicians attributed these profound emotional experiences to oxygen deprivation or unconsciousness, and they really discounted them. And over time, as things changed, people were allowed to stay with their family as they were dying, and they began to witness their own loved ones who apparently died and then came back to life. And then about that time, I would say late 60s, early 70s, a great physician philosopher, Raymond Moody, developed 150 case studies about people who had apparently died, had these profound experiences, and came back to life. And that book was called Life After Life. And in it, he described what he called near-death experiences, or NDEs. And what he said is that a near-death experience is a profound personal experience associated with impending death. And he characterized all the things that people experienced in common. And they were things like feeling the ineffable, things that you can't put in words, going through a tunnel, seeing a white light and being drawn to it, having out-of-body experiences or OBEs, meeting others who had passed away, seeing celestial beings, meeting a being of light or religious figures, feeling totally at peace, feeling unconditional love, going through a life review, and at some point they've reached a border of no return and came back. And when they came back, their lives were profoundly changed, usually for the positive. Now, Raymond Moody was inspired to research NDEs by his mentor, another physician named George Ritchie, who had an NDE when he was age 20, but he didn't know what to call it. And when Moody started his research, he started with someone I'm sure almost everyone's heard of, the physician who defined the stages of grief, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. But I didn't meet Raymond Moody until 1987. I was in graduate school studying transpersonal psychology at the University of West Georgia. He, at that time, was working on a new book about people who had had near-death experiences and met Elvis when they were in this transition. Elvis died in 1977, so he found it very common for people to see Elvis in their near-death experiences. Well, I took several classes from him and was even able to accompany him as he interviewed one woman who had experienced an NDE. And then as things happen, you lose touch, but we reconnected in 2016. And at that time, I learned he'd continued to evolve the study of death research. He was studying shared death experiences, words that are spoken at the threshold of death, and psychomantiums to contact people who have transitioned. Now, what do I mean by those? Well, when his mother died in 1994, Raymond Moody, his wife, his sisters and a brother-in-law experienced what he would soon call a shared death experience. And they're very similar to near-death experiences, but they are experienced by the healthy, fully conscious, alert people in the room with the person who's dying, and sometimes they're experienced by people who are remote from the person who's dying. And in a shared death experience, it's common to see departed relatives come and greet the dying person, or even see the dying person's spirit rise up out of the body. SDEs, as Dr. Kelly will teach in this class, are even more significant than NDEs because they disprove the skeptics' criticisms that NDEs are caused by biochemical reactions to oxygen deprivation. They're experienced by healthy, conscious people. When I met Dr. Moody in 2016, he was giving a talk in a metaphysical bookstore in Atlanta about work he was doing with a graduate student named Lisa Smart, and they were analyzing the things that people say just before they die. They speak in metaphors, particularly about travel metaphors. They say things like, I'm going to catch the train, or I'm late for my plane, or I have to get to Arizona. Or they talk about packing baggage or tying up loose ends, finishing contracts. And their research led to a new book in 2017 called Words at the Threshold. Well, Dr. Moody continued working on the words that people say at death that we think of as gibberish or nonsense. And what he found is if you transcribed what people said as they die, you can interpret those words, and you can understand when people are living in this world and the next world that they speak in different languages. And so in 2020, he wrote a book about that research called Making Sense of Nonsense. And one of the most recent things I've done with him is in pre-COVID, 2019 to 2020, I was able to assist him guide participants through psychomantium experiences based upon an ancient Greek process. A psychomantium is a small, enclosed space set up with a comfortable chair, dim lighting, and a mirror angled at just the right position so it reflects nothing but darkness. And the mirror is used to communicate with people who have died or transitioned. Raymond Moody is incredibly smart. He is clever. He talks like a scholar. And I always call him a leprechaun because his eyes are always twinkling and he's always got a joke, sometimes a dirty joke. And he's very funny and playful. And just before I end, I want to mention two other researchers who followed Moody. There, of course, there are many who have followed Moody. But Evan Alexander is really important because he's a neurosurgeon who had an NDE, and he wrote Proof of Heaven about his experience in 2002. And just last month, William Peters wrote a book called At Heaven's Door that it describes his research on shared death experiences. And I'm just delighted that I've been able to share a little bit with you about near-death experiences and shared death experiences.
What a journey, Teresa. That's so exciting. You know, that right when you started talking about 1972 with Life After Life, I had flashbacks. Now, I'm dating myself. Sorry, Michael. I read that book probably in 1974, I think. Mm-hmm. So I've been following Dr. Raymond Moody all these years, too, and a lot of his, not the more recent ones, but right from back in the 70s when people didn't like to talk about it. So you're absolutely right. And what I appreciate is that we are openly talking about this now, even though there's controversy and people say you can't prove it.
Oh, sure.
It's very exciting.
It is. And, you know, as many have said, what was once mysticism is now science. and what is now considered by many to be mysticism or you know, unprovable beliefs, you know, things that we hope to be true, so we're making them out of thin air. Well, decades from now, when science advances to the point where maybe some of these things can be measured, if we get to that point, maybe it takes hundreds of years, but look at the history of human experiences with death and these near-death experiences and, you know, listening to you talk about Dr. Raymond Moody is fascinating, and you tell it so well. And it is probably something that we're defining kind of in modern terms, but I think that humans have been dealing with for countless millennia. And I think it transcends different dogmatic beliefs, religious beliefs. I think that there are universal aspects, you know, these ideas of white light, of energy, and I think we can really get into entanglement when we hear about shared death experiences and loved ones being next to each other. We talk about the mass consciousness of humanity, right? And being entangled with the person that they're very much a part of us. They're a loved one. They're part of an extension of who we are.
So, Teresa, have you had your own experiences, your own personal experience?
I've not had anything like a near-death experience or a shared death experience, but as much as one can know that life after life exists, I know it. I've had a lot of experiences that you call ineffable, that you just can't translate into words. And, you know, we're not alone in that. I was surprised in the advanced metaphysical concepts class to learn that at the time that text was written, more than 8 million people had recorded near-death experiences. Mm. It's not just a rare occurrence. It's, you know, relatively common. And I imagine if we looked at other cultures that are more attuned to experiencing death and understanding death, it wouldn't be rare at all.
Yeah. So if I can ask, Teresa, what makes you most curious? What got you started? Like, what You know what I'm saying?
I think you had mentioned kind of earlier in grad school.
Well, what really started me was when I applied to become a nun and they turned me down and I told God, I'll get back to you.
Oh,
Hey,
that's an
that's a
interesting twist.
story.
And so what I did was I went on a several years journey to study every religion or spiritual path that I could.
Oh,
Buddhism, Wiccanism, you just name it, yoga, every type of spiritual experience that I could take in, I did. And I had some early experiences with meditation where I could induce out-of-body experiences.
awesome.
Oh, that's an interesting.
It's not, it's not something I consciously practice now, but frankly, I think meditation is, you don't need to go out of your body to prove it, but going out of my body and looking down and seeing myself for the first time, it's both frightening and exhilarating,
I agree. Yeah.
because
Did
it gives you that knowledge.
Was it when you were, kind of delving into those different things that led you to meditate? For example, for me, reading and studying Buddhism was what led me to meditation. Is that the way it happened for you, or was there other things that you were meditating about before you kind of got into the Eastern philosophies?
It was at the moment that happened. I was studying transcendental meditation and Est and that group of practices. And there was a man that I met at my routine, mundane work, who introduced me to all the concepts of that we are just a speck in consciousness. And once I changed that perspective, that I was a little bit of flotsam or jetsam in this, in this big universe. It let me perceive of everything differently, and so I did do a lot of meditation. And it was in a moment where I was trying and experimenting with time with types of meditation, and if I say that I would start by feeling what they describe as a kundalini energy going up your spine and it just kind of exploding out of your head, and then I just kept at it. And I found that if I used a particular rocking motion as I was meditating, it allowed me to get more in tune with external vibrations. But it was during one of those moments when I was like in the zone that I just popped out for the first time. It wasn't something I was trying to do.
How old were you,
Yeah.
Teresa?
Oh, it was probably in my late 20s, 27, 28.
So, if I may, I hope you don't mind, I'm just because I'm very curious. Did you have other experiences as a child? I know when you said that you wanted to be a nun, you were obviously generated or motivated by that spiritual quest. So, was there something else in your childhood that perpetuated your interest in metaphysics?
Well, when you're raised and go to Catholic schools, you're around mysticism a lot. And I was
Yeah.
around very liberal mysticism where other religions were welcome to be studied and concepts you were exposed to more than just dogmatic religious belief. And the only thing that I can say without any exaggeration or enhancement is that I remember flying when I was a child in the hallway, and I imagine I was 8 or 10 at that point. I don't remember talking to beings or seeing fairies under bushes or anything like that, but I do remember the sensation of flying and doing somersaults in outside my body as a child.
So that you could very well have been astral traveling.
Yes.
Yeah,
That's
absolutely. So
fascinating. And
again, I'm curious because, sorry, Michael, I'm kind of
oh, go ahead.
excited here if you don't mind. Because
Oh,
see, what you're talking about for the listeners and for Michael is back in the late 60s, early 70s, this was more of an underground, kind of an underground genre. It was only just in the 60s the onset of hypnosis being accepted or even being studied to be accepted. And I think a lot of information, like a lot of people were doing research primarily in New York and out of the Jet Propulsion Lab. And I know my mentor, Frank Appleyard, he had was responsible for one of the first hospitals in Canada back in, I think, 1967 to make use of hypnosis. So in the field of metaphysics or the paranormal, you know, this was all very new. So I can only imagine the what Dr. Moody was up against, you know, trying to bring this to his peers. And then for yourself to be involved, I mean, again, there's a lot of outside criticism. How did your people, your family manage, or did you tell them what you were interested in and looking at other religions? Was it okay, or did you come up against some?
It's a mixed bag, and you know, some of them, my brother is knows my full life journey. Others, and my father does not. My mother was half in, half not. So it depended on where they were, and I think that's the way that I chose to treat them, with respect, because you don't want to traumatize people who don't believe the way you do. And by coincidence, I moved to from my home state to Atlanta, so I had some space to experiment. And I had a job that where it did not matter what I did in my personal life. And I did many things on local media that I would probably not do today, but I just had the I just had the freedom to do it, and strong-headed.
Well, you were a free thinker, and you were looking for truth outside of what was known at the moment, at the time. And, you know, just I want to take a moment here to mention something. And by the way, to our listeners in the live chat, all the links have been put in for the various subjects that Teresa, you were talking about, and thank you so much for that. I think we'd be remiss without sharing this anecdote, example rather, from Dr. Edward. And again, thank you, Dr. Edward, for pointing out that Dr. Douglas Kelly had an interview with Dr. Raymond Moody on Paranexus, more paranormal themed, and kind of talking about the afterlife from years back. That's part of that course that we've been going over. So thank you for that. But Dr. Edwards shared a, you know, fascinating story. Not only is he a cardiac arrest survivor, and that occurred during a surgical procedure, he said he didn't really remember what happened to that, though, but he did remember when he was about 9 or 10 years old, he had acute appendicitis. He was being rolled into an elevator to the operating room. His consciousness separated from his body, and he found himself walking next to the medical personnel and the gurney he himself was on. And, you know, that's an amazing experience, and thank you for sharing that, Dr. Edward.
I'm sure that, like, that... Yeah, I know. Edward is an amazing guy. He's shared some of his experiences in the past, and that right there is an NDE for sure. And having had two, you have two NDEs. Like, you're meant to be here, Edward.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Not leaving yet. But, I mean, this is the kind of work that Dr. Moody has been doing throughout his life. He is a medical doctor, though. I don't know if we clarified that for everybody. He actually is a medical doctor who had met other people, and that's what started it. And I think even through these conversations, that's where we get curious. People get curious. And the more they talk about their experiences, then, you know, others have secrets that they really want to tell, like NDEs. So that's exciting. So what is it that you're doing now, Teresa? Like, what kind of work? You're still working with Dr. Moody?
Well, he gives his classes at a metaphysical bookstore that is not too far from where I live. He lives about an hour east of Atlanta. I think he was born in that little town in Georgia, but it's one of these little quaint antebellum towns where everybody knows everybody. But he goes to this particular metaphysical store to give his psychomantium classes and some others. And he does some multi-class sessions, you know, 3-month classes. So I see him there. You know, the last 2 years have been sort of difficult. He's not traveling. Mm-hmm. But I did have the opportunities to spend time with him. And he is just, you know, when you're in his presence, you are in awe for a couple of reasons. One is his intellect. When he starts talking about any topic, he starts back in ancient Rome or with philosophers or in ancient Greece. Or you remember when we went to China and saw this. He is so educated and well-spoken. And the other thing about him is that he is all love. His eyes, they're not any irises in them. They're just black twinkling stars. And he's just... You want to be in his presence. And I think that is a characteristic of people who have been through NDEs or shared death experiences. Mm-hmm. I bet Dr. Wong is that way. I bet his patients adore him, you know, or anyone in his circle adores him because these experiences really change your life. You know your place in the universe is really not so significant in the whole scheme of things, but you're so glad to be a drop in that ocean.
You know, I think if I can speak from experience for a moment, I've had both an NDE and a shared death experience. And what I believe it did for me is make me more present. Do you know? And I have this love affair with death. I'm going to be really honest about that, because going home excites me, but it's to be here now, and it's just to be present, to live from the inside out, and that recognizing that I'm a spirit in a body. And I always know when I'm getting a little bit disjointed, where I'm too much in my head or my emotions are a little out of balance, and I take that breath and just come right back in my body. And it's acknowledging right down to my diaphragm, you know, and that solar plexus, that's where my spirit lives, is down there.
You've reminded me of two things. First, I want to say that everyone listening can go back in their mind and acknowledge that they've had this experience when they were driving. Yes. And it happens to all of us. You are driving along a highway, or most often it happens when you're on a highway, and you realize 5 miles have gone by and you don't remember it because you were out. And we've all had that experience. And so these are common things that I think if we were more comfortable with acknowledging them, we would all realize it's a very common experience. And for you, Dr. Vicky, boy, the first thing I thought of when you said you're in love with this death experience is there's a new career that's emerged in the last decade or so, the death doula. Wouldn't it be interesting to know what they see?
Well, you know, the stories that I've heard from some people that I know that work in hospice, you know, are, you know, fascinating as well. And I think... well, Dr. Anna, you were about to say something. I'm sorry.
No, I've actually come across a course out of Vancouver. I'm in Canada, so out of Vancouver, that I have thought about taking, to be honest, because I think it's such an, how do I say, it's not a pleasure. It's like you're so grateful for that shared experience, and it's a privilege, and to be a part of that and to reassure people, in my view. Mind you, I've been in lots of situations with people who are near end of life, so it doesn't make me nervous. If anything, it's the people who are surviving those who are dying that have the hardest time.
That's the truth. And you're sharing your perspective and your wisdom on the subject and your the ability to help guide them through the transition.
Mm.
And, you know, a couple, I think we're going to go a little long on the discussion before we get to our cards this evening. But, you know, I was thinking, you know, you had mentioned that kind of out-of-body experience while meditating, which is, you know, similar to the near-death experience, this idea of being out of your body, viewing yourself from above. It's makes me think of getting to that plane of thought, of awareness that is, that transcends this physical world that we know is there. We can feel it. And I also was going to kind of bring it back around. Dr. Hunter, you were talking about near-death experiences and going home, and I assume to then reincarnate back into life, going into the abstract realm, the non-corporeal realm, and then coming back into existence. Well, first off, is that, did I read that correctly, Dr. Vicky?
Oh, I don't know. I'm going back to the home planet.
Oh, the home planet. Okay, I got you on that one.
I don't know.
I was going to ask Teresa, when we think about these, you know, these near-death experiences and shared-death experiences, even more importantly, and we see these images, if I could be so bold as to ask, what is your take? What do you think is, what is your personal feeling on the next step, that next plane of existence?
You know, I don't know. And so I'm agnostic about, agnostic isn't the right word. I can't be certain. Mm-hmm. But what I think happens is that my energy transforms into a greater cosmos and then goes on for a different type of experience. I think that when we limit,
I love that.
We limit it by our sense organs and think that's the only kind of experience there is. But rocks have consciousness, plants do. That my little dog yapping in the background has consciousness.
You should have heard mine last week.
I don't think that we should limit our understanding of what we transition to into what we know as humans.
I agree.
So I'm open to whatever happens.
You know, when you had mentioned how, and because that's honestly my take on it too, Teresa, is when I leave, when my spirit leaves, I go into a greater consciousness. Like that energy just transforms and takes another journey. Like we're all part of that universe. And I kind of see it as a bubble that transforms into some other life form, however mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. might go. But when I love that clarification you made about how we have a perception of that and we're trying to understand it through our physical senses, and you can't do that. It doesn't make any sense at all. Mm-hmm. It's beyond that. I appreciate that. Just as an aside, have you thought of becoming a death doula, Teresa?
I have, and I'm 67, and I have a job, a regular daytime job that I adore, and I think I'll work for another 3 years. And one of the reasons that I was so interested in getting my doctorate from IMHS is that the same thing that you alluded to with Dr. Moody. He had credibility because he was an MD, and I know what I want to teach is truth, but I think people like to see credentials. Yeah. And so I want to have, and that's the reason I started taking these classes. And I've learned so much through them, but I will do something else. And all I know is that I have to be prepared and something will happen and it'll be perfect.
That's awesome. Well,
yeah.
I think we could almost be friends, Teresa. I'm 67 this year too. We've had a similar journey along
of
the way.
Of course, you
know, mm-hmm. back in the 70s, that's so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you guys think like I'm a young person. I'm actually 87. I just age very well. But that's you know, one of these things, and I know we're getting close on time, but one of these things I wanted to talk about too is we talk about near death experiences, shared death experiences. One of the most fascinating things I've heard are noteworthy and really compelling stories of people that have had visitations of loved ones that are real, physical. They've been able to touch them either really at the moment of a loved one's death, and it might be across the country, a continent, or the world, or sometimes years after death. And, you know, I think How is that? Of course, we go into the next realm. I don't think it's corporeal. I don't think it's linear time like we know it. And I do strongly believe in entanglement, in the, notion that when we become emotionally attached with people, when we become emotionally connected with people, we do become entangled. Our consciousness can emerge. We have the greater human consciousness that I do believe in. And I think that we can entangle with individuals through that greater human consciousness. And I'm curious about your thoughts on that.
I think that is true. And you've reminded me of another anecdote I hadn't intended to share, but if you'll indulge me for a minute, I'll share it. My father is 91, and at times he is not in good health. And I took him on a trip, and he started seeing the room in psychedelic colors and weird things. And so we drove home in an emergency. I said, "Daddy, you're not going to die in my car. You're going to have to make it to home." And so, but he was okay. But after that time, he began seeing people in his home when he was alone, walking through walls. He saw my mother, who is deceased. He saw relatives. And at one point, he walked by one of these elves walking through walls, and he offered him a beer.
Oh, I love that.
But I tried very hard to visit my father and try and be out of body with him, because I wanted to experience that with him. And it was, I couldn't. But it's not just believers who have these experiences, but he doesn't know how to put this in the same context we do.
Well, and I'd imagine if you weren't a believer before, you have a compelling reason to believe in something after one of these kinds of experiences.
Did we lose you? I'm here.
Absolutely.
Okay.
All right. But, this idea of the next realm of going into that greater consciousness, it's always been a fascinating one, and it really makes me think about, all the different possibilities. I can't say that I've had an experience that would be comparable. I don't have anything like that that would be kind of on the level that you've had, but I'm fascinated by it, and I don't necessarily have faith in a lot of things, but I have a lot of hope, and I have a lot of good reason to think that a lot of these things, may be true, maybe absolutely gives you hope. It gives you that kind of spark. It is some kind of indication of what the greater truth is that we can only aspire to truly understand. And again, I will quote my favorite quote of all time from Albert Einstein, that the mysterious is the most beautiful thing that we can experience.
That's a great quote.
Michael, you could always start doing deep meditations and take yourself on a flight.
That's true.
It's possible.
Trust me, that's true.
Possible. I really have to eject this, aside from the fact when I drowned when I was 5, so that impacted me very young to pursue metaphysics and say goodbye to religion. But I, when my brother passed, I was with him when his spirit left. And it was the single most profound experience I've ever had. It changed me forever. And I've, aside from my own experience, to share that with another individual. Sometimes we have our own experiences and we still question them. We're still uncertain, but a clarity came to me in that moment. And that's why, to me, it's my normal, if that makes sense. But I did a lot of, especially when I was young, I don't do it anymore because staying here is the bigger challenge, I think, but astral traveling and experiencing that out of body, or to even alter your consciousness to become one with the universe while you're still in your body. Would you agree with that, Teresa?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And they're not really good words to describe it to people who don't go through it, but it's a warmness of emotion and a wholeness that even with the person you love the most in the world, it transcends that.
I agree. There's, if I can say that, oneness. And what does oneness mean? You know, and I guess to intellectualize it, we could each have our own interpretation. But when it's cosmic, again, we're just this tiny little speck of this enormous fabrication, if you will, that's all moving and changing and energized at the same time, and we're all a part of that. And you know, we do our best every week on the program to encourage people to navigate the world just to be you. Just do you, no matter how difficult the world is. Don't let yourself get off track, because truly you're a spirit and a body. And that's the most important thing. If you know you're a spirit and you experience that spirituality, the thinking changes, the emotions change, your body changes. That's not to say you won't have a hard time at times. Your body will still go through lots of stuff. You know, everybody's got health things going on. But would you agree with that too, Teresa? Is that how you kind of see it?
And I agree with you completely, and I want to bring in something Dr. Michael said, which is, I think that the concept of entanglement describes the way one should feel, not just with loved ones and friends, but with the whole universe. And I think maybe entanglement may be what we mean by cosmic love.
Absolutely. That's a great point.
That makes total sense. You know, we have gone over time, and I was messaging with Michael. We do not have to draw cards tonight, and I apologize to anybody who's looking forward to them. But I think for the first time, Michael and I are not going to draw cards tonight. We're just going to carry on a few more minutes talking with Teresa. She's going to stay with us because I'm really enjoying this.
Oh, this has been excellent.
Well, my apologies to those who were expecting readings. I always listen to them, and I know people get a lot from them. But
well, you know what? We can actually break this tradition once in a while.
So. We can, and we've had a great topic. And I think a lot of people have gotten a lot from this, from hearing what you've had to say, Teresa. And what I'm also going to say, and this is my mea culpa, is throw your name in. I'm going to keep track. Join us next week, and you're going to get a double pull.
Oh, hey, I'm up for that, Michael.
Yep.
Totally
so
up for that.
We're going to tell a little story next week.
I think next week we're going to talk a little bit, if Michael's agreeable, of course, because I'm just
I'm pretty disagreeable about things.
But we're going to talk about what it is to do readings and the different types of readings and how, from kind of segueing from tonight's program into next week's program, is, you know, tapping into that altered consciousness in whatever interpretation you have, and how to apply that into intuition for your own life, but as well as, you know, helping out others, and if you are a reader, and how to interpret. So I think that's what we'll do next week, is what is a reading, and how do we interpret them, and what do we do with that? Because I think everything is changeable. Teresa, do you agree?
Absolutely. I couldn't be in more sync with you than if we were one person.
Oh, my God. We're going to have drinks together, Teresa.
I'm starting to feel like a third wheel here. Jeez.
You paid for our wine.
Oh, that's fun. Completely, thoroughly enjoyed having you here, Teresa. Your journey is, remarkable, to say the least. And that you continue to pursue your curiosity and expand and, you know, work with people is awesome. Because it's not always easy. We know that.
It wasn't first 40 years, but now it is.
You know, my granddad always had something he used to say that would crack me up. He just said, you know, it's just the first 100 years that are hardest. After that, it's smooth sailing. But, you know, life is that cycle. Life is the yin and yang of sorts. You know, it's not always in perfect balance. But, you know, we go through times of strife, and we go through times of plenty. And it is living in the moment and appreciating what we have and appreciating what the potential for what we can have and what we can achieve, not just for ourselves, but for others in the world around us. And that can be anything from just doing, you know, little deeds to Dr. Raymond Moody's work, which has helped push the boundaries of thought on what near-death experiences are and what they can be. And Teresa and your contributions, even, you know, tonight, amongst other things that you've done to bring that kind of knowledge to the forefront, you know, it's truly exciting in the direction that we are going as a species and our intellectual and social evolution. And I'm really looking forward to making it to 150 to see what things are going to be looking like.
Nicely said, Michael.
Thank you. Especially with my own, you know, self-serving desire to live past my 87 years now. I'm going to go for at least another 75. We'll see how it goes.
Michael, and have out-of-body experiences. Pleasant.
Yes. Michael, I hate to tell you, but I'm really 1,000 years old. So I got I can remember 1,000 years ago. So I got one up on you. Oh, probably, you know. I just remember.
I can never have anything, can I, Dr. Vicky?
No, I'm not letting you have that. I'm kidding.
I just wish I could remember. Well, I told you, long-time listeners might have remembered my recollection of a vivid dream I once had, looking at the totality sum of my existence, and the only thing I remembered with clarity was I was looking at a simple line like you might see on a report from a business. It just said, number of lives, colon, 37. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where that number came from, what it would mean. Maybe that is the totality of my existence and how many lives I've lived. Have all of those lives been human? Ah, the interesting questions that come with dreams. But
Ooh, well, you just opened a can of worms there. Thank you, Teresa.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you both for making this such a pleasant evening and a nice experience. I really appreciate you being great hosts.
Oh, well, you made it easy. This is a fantastic topic. Thank you so much, you know, for just being here and agreeing to come on and listening to me babble, Dr. Vicky say some fascinating things, and appreciate your contributions. Thank you so much.
You do more than babble.
Yes, he does. You know, then once in a while, thing with Michael, he just backs up and lets me have the spotlight for a second, but I know I'm going to fall because we banter after the show, you know. We have a really great time on this program. So
we do.
We enjoy it a lot.
I'll be listening next week.
Well, good. We'll look forward to it. And Dr. Hunter, I'm sorry, Dr. Vicky, I was corrected earlier. Dr. Vicky, we are, you know, that topic for next week is, you know, beautiful and coinciding with some double card pulls that we're going to be doing for a couple of folks. So looking forward to that.
I'm going to try to explain to people what I do while I'm doing it. That's what I'll do.
That's perfect. My mind's in the same place. So
awesome.
Looking forward to that. I hope everybody can join us next week. And thank you for joining us tonight.
Michael, yes, you know how I see you really is you're timeless. You don't have an age. You're just Michael. You're not that age or this age. We just click. We hang out. And age has nothing to do with it. So I just had to clarify that before we close the program.
Oh, well, thank you. You know, I always had this joke, and it was funnier the younger I was, but I always had the joke that I was an old person in a young person's body, because I was reading the you know, newspaper and the opinion letters to the editor section when I was like 20. That's not a good sign. But thank you everybody for joining us. Thank you so much, Teresa. You know, you're going to continue to do great things. You have done great things and just fascinating stories. Hey, maybe, you know, down the road we can revisit this. It's been a great discussion. So a huge thank you to Teresa for joining us tonight. Thank you, as always, Dr. Vicky Hunter. I appreciate you and your contributions, as always. And looking forward to everybody joining us next week. Until then, excuse me. Until then, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone. Have a good week.